You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I'm William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, and on Berkeley Liberation Radio. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org starting a week from today. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net with questions or suggestions, and you can send us mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806.
The show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee, located at 610 Haywood Road. Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop.
This week, The Final Straw is airing some audio from the recent Anarchist Black Cross Conference, which took place outside of Denver. This is a panel discussion which was hosted by the Denver ABC and includes a number of folks who had been formerly incarcerated and were speaking on the importance of supporting prisoners, among other topics. The panelists we'll be hearing this week include Lynn Stewart, Jihad Abdul-Mumit, Kazi Torre, and Mark Cook.
Oh, and Eric McDavid. Lynn Stewart was a movement lawyer involved in anti-capitalist and liberation prisoners, as well as other difficult and unliked folks, since the 1960s, who was incarcerated in 2010 to a decade in prison for passing a public statement on from her client Abdel Rahman, convicted in the first World Trade Center bombing. She got out of prison in 2013 on compassionate release, and as she was dealing with terminal breast cancer.
Jihad Abdul-Mumit is the national chairperson for the Jericho Movement and spent 23 years in prison for his involvement with the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, and is on the Majlis Ashura of Muslim Alliance in North America, or MANA. He is also a community activist, motivational speaker, author, and playwright.
Kazi Torre is a former Black Panther and was a member of the United Freedom Front, an American Marxist guerrilla group active from the 1970s through the 80s, that carried out at least 20 bombings of government and corporate targets and 9 bank robberies. The UFF is also known as the Sam Melville / Jonathan Jackson Unit, as well as the Ohio 7.
Mark Cook became active in a growing leftist paramilitary underground in Seattle in 1967, which perpetrated a series of high-profile bombings and robberies. He was co-founder of the Black Panther Party chapter in the Walla Walla State Penitentiary and served as its lieutenant of information for many years. In 2000, he was released after serving 24 years in prison for his participation in a bank robbery and jailbreak associated with the George Jackson Brigade in Seattle. The GJB was a leftist urban guerrilla group in the Pacific Northwest that carried out bombings, bank robberies, and other actions to overthrow the U.S. government.
Eric McDavid is a green anarchist who served 9 years of a 20-year sentence and was released this January after a habeas plea led the government to release him. Eric was railroaded along with two other young eco-anarchists by the FBI and convicted of conspiracy to damage property, including planning to blow up dams in the U.S. Eric McDavid's case is exemplary among Green Scare cases in its employment of an infiltrator and informant for the FBI who went by the name Anna. In the next installment, in coming weeks, we'll hear statements from Jerry Koch, who was incarcerated for 9 months in New York maximum security prison for refusing to give information to a grand jury, being released afterwards on a Grumbles motion in January of last year. This will be followed by audience questions. For the full video stream of the event, check out denverabc.wordpress.com. Thanks to Unicorn Riot for the recording.
Next week, tune in to hear Burst's conversation with Lawrence Chirac, a main editor of Anarchy, Journal of Desire Armed.
A couple of quick announcements. Founder of the Free Alabama Movement is currently on hunger strike and in his 620th day in solitary confinement at Holman in Alabama. Robert Earl Council is on day 5 of hunger strike for being denied adequate medical care. There's a request that folks call in to Holman and the DOC of Alabama to inform them that folks on the outside care about Robert Earl Council. You can call Walter Myers, warden at Holman Correctional, at 251-368-8173, or you can call Commissioner Dunn at 334-353-3883. Also, on October 8th, several U.S. cities will be hosting events around the case of Bomani Shakur, otherwise known as Keith Lamar. Rampamani is facing the threat of execution this year by the state of Ohio for alleged participation in the deaths that took place during the Lucasville prison uprising in 1993, a charge that Bomani has always denied, claiming that he stayed in his prison wing to defend his cell. To find out more about his case and the ongoing and upcoming events around the country, check out KeithLamar.com. And now some words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. Someone wrote to me and asked my opinion about, quote, shadow governments, unquote, and what I think the solution is. This term, quote, shadow government, unquote, is used to describe those agencies within a government whose existence is kept secret from the public or whose activities are kept secret. It also includes those private entities to whom secret activities are now outsourced, those so-called private contractors doing the government's dirty work. I suppose this idea of shadow governments becomes more and more of a concern to people as they come to realize just how much of the proverbial iceberg is below the surface. The depth and scope of the domestic spying, the vast array of alphabet soup agencies creeping around, unaccountable, taking liberties with our liberties. This is not the government system as advertised in your 1950s civics textbooks, that's for sure. But look, we can't view shadow governments as something separate and distinct from the rest of government. Despite the perception of shadow government as a distinct rogue operation totally divorced from the above-ground, democratically elected, and fully accountable, benevolent government, shadow governments do not exist in that kind of vacuum. Anywhere that you have private contractors spying on American cell phone communications, somebody has appropriated funds for their desks and their pencils, their coffee pots and their toilet seats. Everywhere that you've got a paramilitary whack job in a ski mask lurking in black sites and waterboarding brown people, somebody has appropriated funds for the guards and the rifles, the shackles and the break room vending machines. So, however secret squirrel any operation is, you can trace the toilet paper and the toner cartridges back to bank accounts set up by middle managers with proper authorization. Whatever that means. And you can justify those accounts' legality by reading the right authorization bill passed by Congress. My point is, the inception of all the secret squirrel shadow government shenanigans isn't really happening in the shadows at all. Turn on C-SPAN and you can watch it all happen. Live. Right now. No kidding. My point is, we cannot think of shadow governments as some separate evil thing operating apart from our wonderful, responsive, kumbaya government. It's not. It's the flip side of the same coin. Currently, the shadow operators conduct grisly business secretly so that their non-shadow counterparts don't have to directly get their hands dirty. But if we came up with some way to disband all shadow government stuff, if we could click the heels of our ruby slippers and make all of that nastiness go away, we'd only change the world for one day. Tops. If we rid the world of shadow government operations today and made the world safe for mom, apple pie, and the American way, whatever that is, we'd turn on C-SPAN tomorrow to find a new flurry of activities to immediately create new government agencies and to shovel millions of our dollars into them. Plain and simple, when you're in the omelet business, you gotta find somebody to crack the eggs. And those egg crackers don't come cheap. Newsflash. The United States government is in the omelet business. And we're all eggs. So there's only one way to do away with shadow government, and that's to get rid of the portion of government in the light that casts the shadow in the first place. It all has to go, because it's all part of the larger complex that functions together. Even the most responsive, limited, accountable government, in the maintenance of its own power and authority, will eventually and inevitably end up with redacted documents in secret files, computer databases filled with information not shared with the folks who paid for the software. Where there's government, there's shadow government. And where there's shadow government, there's a vast population of slaves, monitored, surveilled, controlled, and exploited, held at gunpoint by those who strive to manipulate what everyone knows and, as a consequence, what everyone thinks and does. Freedom demands that we burn the entirety of the master's house, not just half of it. These are the words of anarchist prisoner Sean Swain, held incommunicado on orders of Ohio prison officials, whose addresses are posted on blastblog.noblogs.org. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at his new address by directing it to Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.
Hi, welcome everybody. Thanks for coming out today. My name is Josie. Thanks, guys. So we're going to, this is very loud. So this is being hosted by Deborah and Chris Black Ross, who are our super loud. And thanks to our student friends who helped get us this space, and it's awesome to have like such a big room with so many friends and folks in it. So thanks for coming out. Yeah, so we'll get started. I'm going to read some brief bios on all the folks that we are really gracious. Like, I feel great, so I don't want to work for that. But folks are here and sharing their experiences with us about incarceration and being political prisoners. So bear with me as I read these bios. So the first person on our panel that is going to talk tonight is going to be Lynn Stewart.
Black liberation movement.
was imprisoned for his role in 20 bombings combating apartheid in South Africa and the United States imperialism in Central America. The UFF has been called undoubtedly the most successful of the leftist guerrilla groups of the 1970s and 80s, and struck powerful blows to South African Airways, Mobil, IBM, Union Carbide, and various courthouses and U.S. military targets. Troy was convicted on federal charges of possession of firearms and seditious conspiracy, conspiring to overthrow, put down, destroy by force, and violence the U.S. government.
Ow!
He is one of the few, if any, new Africans to be charged with this act. Erica David is a green anarchist who was entrapped by an FBI informant and charged with a single count of conspiracy to use firearms explosives to damage corporate and government property. After serving nearly 10 years in prison, his judgment and sentence were vacated when it became known that the FBI had failed to disclose potentially exculpatory evidence to the defense. Eric pleaded guilty to a lesser charge that carried a maximum 5-year sentence. He was released almost immediately. McDavid is a victim of a long history of concerted effort by federal and state entities in the U.S. to target anarchists and other radicals. And Eric has just got out of jail, so big welcome to.
Most of the time in front of juries, judges, etc., defending people on a number of charges. But I want to start by saying thank you to every one of you who helped me come home, because the effort to bring me home on compassionate release, spearheaded by my husband, Ralph Pointer, sitting in the second row.
Here, Ralph.
Was in fact a tour de force, because he and other the East Coast, the West Coast defense committees organized about 70,000 petition signers, as well as people who came out to demonstrations, etc. And he himself stood in front of the White House during August of 2013. On those hot summer days, just talking to anybody who would talk to him and giving them a leaflet. But all of that came together, and on the 31st of January night, 2013, I did come home, and I must say, I am more than happy to be here. I do feel like small potatoes standing next to some of my compatriots here who did 20 and 30 years, but we're all from the same class, let's put it that way. And that class is people who have been in jail and know who we left behind and what they are suffering and what is happening to them. And I think all of us dedicate our lives as we go forward this day and every day to bringing those political prisoners and prisoners of war home. Everyone that comes home is... You bring your own cheering gallery, it's going to all work out. But there are people we left behind. I'm not only talking only political prisoners, but I think they are the most vulnerable and the most important. And if we are to call ourselves a movement of any kind, we must bring them home. They were the men and women who fought for us in the 60s and 70s and 80s when Jenny read out the names of people here who have done such glorious deeds. I really feel like small potatoes. But I tell you, I know that I will spend the rest of my life and whatever talents I have keeping this voice raised to remind people of who is still in there and how much they deserve to come home. This is an aging population in there. It is aging and it is subjected to prison medicine, which is like military music. It is a misnomer. And as a result, we know we have to bring them home. I think that I can report that so far, Mumia, the support he received when he was, it was revealed that he was had a terrible episode with diabetes in which he had almost a coma. And then later now he is fighting. His lawyers, Brett Grody and Bob Boyle, have gone to court in federal court in Pennsylvania, bringing a lawsuit on behalf of all prisoners in Pennsylvania to get them Hep C treatments. Right. You cannot imagine. They say it's too expensive. We have to make it too expensive to them not to do it. I hope my parole officer doesn't take that wrong. I mean, you know, I mean by pressure and demonstrate. But anyway, I have recently been written up in the Daily News column as by a fellow who, first of all, lamented the fact that I hadn't died yet. I mean, he said she got out of jail on compassionate release. She was only supposed to live 6 months. And here she's been out there for over a year and a half. And she intends to remain out here. And I can tell you also, he also then went on for the rest of the column to complain about the fact that I talk about political prisoners. And that is indeed what I am doing and what I will do. And I just want to share with you that we are bringing a new initiative to the National Lawyers Guild. It's already been semi-approved, but it's not approved by the Guild as a whole. And of course, I think most of you know that the Lawyers Guild is supposedly a group of lawyers that puts people ahead of corporations. So we're going to put them to the test. We want to start an initiative that makes sure every political prisoner, every prisoner of war, has a lawyer, has someone that they can rely on. Because everyone up here knows how important it is when you are under the thumb of the state, when you are in prison, when you find one guard or 10 guards that decide they're going to do you, you want to be able to say, you touch me, I'm going right to my lawyer, you'll have a lawsuit so big you won't be able to drive your fancy car anymore. And it is a very, very important facet of the defense of these brothers who are in jail while all the time working to bring them home. The most beautiful word in the English language, I always say, especially when you're in jail, is home. And that's what we must make ourselves the forward vanguard or the rear guard or whatever guard you want to be, but we have an obligation to bring home these men who fought for us in the 60s, and we all know what happened and how they were done in by COINTELPRO and also by the corruption of the state, which continues today. So we are here to bring you our own stories. My story is a lightweight one, 5 years. I'm not going to say I could do it standing on my head because I got in a lot of trouble. But I only can say, compared to what other people, the thought of being in jail for 20 and 30 years is just really incomprehensible. And for people who are in 40 and 50 years, and I talk about Jaleel Montecom and Albert Woodfox, and you know the names, I don't have to repeat them. David Gilbert, please think about this, make it your priority, speak out, go to your churches, if you go to church, I don't think many of us do, but at any rate, go to the organizations you're part of, everything. Speak out on this. This is a travesty that these people remain in jail. I know I am going to give the rest of my life to bringing them home. It is so important, it is so wonderful when someone comes home. Thank you very much.
Educating politicized, well, I looked at we call it social prison in the 60s, and mostly by illegal immigrants from Canada. These guys told me that we could take the prison over with the help of other prisons, having faith in them, we could change the way prisons were run in Washington State. Well, it was kind of hard for me to buy until they told me they were going to run an underground newspaper. I said, well, you know you're going to get busted trying to run an underground newspaper. But they showed me how to run one without getting busted, how to make one out of gelatin and mirrors and sticks and the back of a powdered paper. And we ran an underground newspaper in Walla Walla anonymously. We were white, Indians, and blacks doing this newsletter. But nobody in the prison knew who we were, and that was important because, as you know, there is racial antagonism in prisons. We did this, and they agreed. We became prison bosses, general prison bosses. Our guys who are heads of gangs or this, that, and the other prisons look up to. But they looked up to that newspaper, the bomb, as a prison boss. But we said, when. And based on that, we were able to not only change the prison at that time, but it bled over into other prisons and other times, creating things that were never created before this. And such as a constant visit in Washington State, wearing their own clothes, being able to leave prison on a furlough even if you still had a life sentence to do. This was an education for me. And at the same time, I was influenced by guys in San Quentin. These guys came in as just, you know, social prisoners, but they became politicized. They were the San Quentin Six, Hugo Pinnell, George Jackson. They inspired us to try the same thing in Washington State. And so we formed a chapter of the Black Panther Party in Washington State. As a matter of flip a coin of who's going to be captain and who's going to be lieutenant. I became lieutenant. Lieutenant of Information. And the main thing that I followed while I was in the Panthers was the 10-point program. You can look at anything that the Panthers did or tried to do, it was based on that. The government would not provide certain things for the community. The Panthers said, well, we'll provide it. They provided breakfast for the kids to go to school. They're proud of a freedom school. They had medical clinics, free medical clinics. These were things that they started and later on grew. In fact, to this day in Seattle, if you ever happen to go up there, there's a Downs Medical Clinic on the 21st and Jackson. That was a Panther clinic. We turned it over to the city. We gave medical assistance free. They do it by a sliding scale now. But the main thing that I learned from the Panthers is that always have faith in the people. That's a motto or slogan that they use, having faith in the people. And I have faith in the anarchists because they're the ones who stood by me every day I was in prison while I was a political prisoner. I received stamps, newsletters, books to read, and when I got out, while I was at the end of my time in prison, I didn't know. I thought I was going to be in prison for the rest of my life. I still have two life sentences to do. They forgot about it. But the anarchists in Seattle, mainly the anarchists in Seattle, work, did theater things on the street. They wrote to various political influences, and there was an anarchist that got me out. And I want to, you know, applaud you guys out here. You're part of that group. You're not separate from those people up there. In every movement in the United States, the anarchists always survive. You can see other groups that had names and they disappeared. But anarchists always survive. I got support from anarchists in Great Britain and in Europe. I'm a socialist. My co-defendant, excuse me, I call him my co-defendant, my comrade Ed Mead, he's a communist. He's a strong communist. But he was able to sit with those, anarchists to help get me out of prison. In other words, I was a political prisoner, and it took anarchists, the main force, to get me out of prison, whether I wanted to get out or not. I had given up. I knew I had two life sentences and 15 years mandatory on each one before I ever got out. But it didn't work out that way. Somehow they pushed those people so hard that they were the ones to get me out. So I have faith in you, all of you out there, because you have faith in me that I could come out and somehow support what you're doing today. I have faith in you because you got help all of these people here, and I talked to them. They received anarchist support, newsletters, etc., while they were in prison too. And even though we may not be anarchists ourselves, some of us still are, but some of us are not. We're the same people, as Lynn said. We're not just political prisoners. We're the common people. We're the people that talk about, you know, power to the people. We have a lot of lessons to learn. We've done had a lot of failures. I talked to my comrade Ed about some of our failures, and sometimes he'd argue against me. And one time I said, you know, we'd probably still be out on the street if you hadn't said one word. You hadn't swore that we were George Jackson when you were in prison. You wrote those newsletters out. I said, that's one of the worst things you ever could have done. And he said, you know, you're right. Never tell anybody something they don't need to know. And I hate to say it, never trust anybody, because we're in a movement that isn't stagnant. It's constant. I'll be pushed up daisies pretty soon, but you'll still be going. It'll be the same movement. This is the same movement that Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Geronimo, the Apache, they fought for us. They struggled for us. We're trying to get these bosses, capitalists, these people who don't pay us all of our wages, get them out of power. You know, profit is nothing but unpaid wages. Taxes are also unpaid wages. And that's why we struggle against capitalism and the government. Because they're taking unpaid wages and they're spending them on things that we don't need. They're spending them on wars that we don't need. That's our money, that's not theirs. When we talk about things in Ferguson, about cops assaulting our citizens, we pay their wages and they're doing things with our money that we don't want them to do. And that's why we're having things like Black Lives Matter going right now, a new movement rising up. It may not be all that politically strong, but it's very important that it's consistent. It's drawn on what has happened in the past, and they're trying to move forward. And I'll give them all the help I can. I have faith in them. I have faith in you. Thank you.
We're listening to audio from the former prisoner panel prior to the North American Anarchist Black Cross event held in Denver, Colorado this year. More after this break.
In the spirit of God, in the spirit of the ancestors, in the spirit of the Black Panthers, in the spirit of Asada Shakur, we make this movement towards freedom for all those who have been oppressed and all those in the struggle. Yeah, yeah, check it. There were lights and sirens, gunshots frying, cover your eyes as I describe a scene so violent, seemed like a bad dream. She laid in the blood puddle, blood bubbled in her chest, cold air brushed against open flesh, no room to rest. Pain consumed each breath, shot twice with her hands up. Police questioned, but shot before she answered. One panther lost his life, the other ran for his. Scandalous the police were as they kicked and beat her. Comprehension, she was beyond trying to hold on to life. She thought she lived with no arm, that's what it felt like. Got to the hospital, eyes held tight. They moved the room to room, she could tell by the light. Handcuffed tight to the bed, through her skin they bit. With guns to her head, every word she got hit. Who shot the trooper, they asked her.
put mace in her eyes, threatened to blast her. Her mind raced till things got still. Opened her eyes, realized she's next to her best friend who got killed. She got chills if they told her that's what she would be next. Hurt mixed with anger, survival was a reflex. They lied and denied visits from a lawyer. But she was building as they tried to destroy her. If it wasn't for this German nurse, they would have served the worst. I read the sister's story, knew that it deserved a verse. I wonder what would happen if that would have been me. All of this just so we could be free, so dig it, y'all.
Greetings everyone, peace, assalamu alaikum. My name is Jihad Umi, formerly a member of the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army. Clock myself here. Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm very humbled and honored, and I'm also very proud to represent what I'm getting ready to tell you about. I joined the Black Panther Party in Plainfield, New Jersey, which is where I'm from, when I was 16 years old. And for the most part, pretty much all the leaders in the community, various organizations, were either teenagers or their young 20s, something to take a note of. All the Huey Newtons, I mean, there were some older guys, you know. I think even when you talk about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, both of them were assassinated at 39. So 39, and prior to that, all the things that they've done, the history that they've made, the books that we read about them, just take note of their age, don't say that. The youth. It's been the youth. Got grandma here now. It's been the youth. We were young, strong, courageous. Sad thing about it is that, as the saying goes, the more things change, the more they remain the same. My 40-hour job that I have now as a case manager, after doing 23 years in prison, of all places, I go inside the prison today because I work with a nonprofit health center. My comrade Mark talked about building health and he built one in Seattle, New Jersey, from the ground up and now working one. So, but the difference is that the one that we built, as my comrade said, was really funded by the people, supported by the people. There was no block funding. I live in Richmond, Virginia now. There's no Virginia Department of Health or building Department of Health that was supporting us. It was the people's money, the people's energy that did this. There was no, him and I was talking about business and all these organizations, they existed, but what we did when I was flipping pancakes at 17 years old before I went to school, for our breakfast program, it wasn't for any internship because we needed to feed our home and tend to our home. So, eventually, as things would happen on the ground with the Black Liberation Army, we started doing expropriations. I wasn't one that could say that I didn't do it. Which is the case a lot of times, we set up a frame. But there's a lot of soldiers now that actually put in their work that's in jail. And it's a struggle to get people to acknowledge that here in 2015 when there's such a busting gap between what had happened and to make it real today for you. So what is a freedom fighter? So I say, when you open up a history book and you see Nat Turner or Harriet Tubman, do you see a criminal? Do you?
No way.
When we talk about Martin Luther King, Matula Shakur, and Sunni Ali Kohli, and then Peltier, do you see a criminal?
No way.
Right? Draw the connection. And it's very, very important, sisters and brothers, that we support our freedom fighters that have sacrificed themselves and are in these situations that they're still captive. And I'm going to make a very simple statement to show why. With all the things that's going on, police brutality, racial discrimination and violence, marginalization, economic exploitation, social degradation, all the things that we see, hunger, homelessness, all the things that we attempted to address. If it calls for anybody to really stand up and address that, they are captured by the enemy, they need to set up a frame where we can be carried out of action, because we also believe in the right to self-defense. You're not supporting. We have supported the freedom fighters that's actually taking that extra step, which suggests, unfortunately, that you won't support the ones that may be captured today or tomorrow. Because we are setting a trend of non-support. We are setting a trend of pain, our freedom fighters, our captains, those that sacrifice themselves. We're giving them no support because capitalism is the type of thing that would, particularly nowadays, that would take our attention. When we leave these meetings now, we may very well listen to not the guilt trip, right? Believe me when I tell you. When we go, we can get out of that box, sit back and chill out, pop a beer, maybe. There's so much stuff going on that we may not be able to ignore it and sustain the attention needed for a movement. I was at a meeting about a month or two ago, sitting next to the sister. We were talking about hunger and Michigan community, and she got really emotional. And I looked at her and I said, you know what, I swear to God, I was at a meeting like this 40 years ago. Same woman crying, same condition, same homelessness. The more things change, the more it remains the same. We'll be forever a slave. And as Malcolm said, blood running down your jaw, Novocaine, injected in it by chasing the capitalist carrots. And we really will forget what we really need to be doing, sisters and brothers. So it's not just my story. It's the same as my comrade Mark in the Panther Party and Kazi. We were all in the same after the Soviet Union saw a picture of us all together. And I don't know if you've ever seen that picture that he has right there. Together in the network, it is a very honor to be here at the table, to be my new comrades here, you know, Jerry and Eric. But to know that my comrades still here without beer to pray. Look at me. If I took my teeth out through the floor, look like me. We're getting older. We have to really pass this torch. And before I sit down, I just want to, for those who may not be familiar, with self-determination and right to self-defense, I'm going to take this a minute to give you a scenario. So my man here, so would you stand up, brother?
Man, that's it. We have to give some room to fill the sack. So, and imagine, and Lynn, that's my dear. Could you get up, please? Just for a second, please.
Oh, now you're in trouble.
So my comrade Eric and my sister Lynn, they are coming from Walmart. I have to put that into an example. And here I come, a robber, to accost them. All right? So, I'm gonna take her invisible purse there in Eric's. Should he stop me?
Yes.
If he doesn't stop me, what would you consider him to be?
Oh.
A whip. What else? Come on, let's hear it.
Unmentionable.
All right. Should he stop me, right, bro? You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So let me talk up a little bit. So what is this happens? Okay. Now I went over here and Eric threw me down and tossed my behind down. Now it happens again, tomorrow, and again. And as a matter of fact, it just happens to you too. It's happening to everybody. And pretty soon we realize it's happening to the whole community. We're constantly being accosted. So either one of two things, you're going to stop going to Walmart, find a place else to go, move out of your own community, or you're going to take control of your own situation and defend yourself. That is the history of poor and oppressed people in this country. The right to self-defense. And if you don't do it, then I can say right to your face as a black panther that you are a flat out power. You can intellectualize all you want, but you are nothing but a power. And you are nothing but great to be able to support our freedom fighters that are in prison right now to know who they are, recognize who they are, take a stand, make the connection between the anarchists today, Black Lives Matter, and everything. Because it won't matter if you can't support the freedom fighters that are there today, rotting in prison. Because that's where you will be. If they come for me in the morning, they'll come for me in the afternoon. You understand? All right.
He said that Eric David had to fight back. He didn't say I had to. And everybody knows that at their final days, the Black Panthers were mostly female Panthers.
All right.
My name is Kazi Torrey, as you know. I'm a former political prisoner. At the time, well, I was charged with seditious conspiracy, conspiring to overthrow the government, forcing violence, and I pleaded guilty.
And right on.
I think that, you know, this government needed to be overthrown, and so we need to get busy. But anyways, I come from a different part of the movement than a lot of other people do. We weren't taking selfies or going to conferences or, you know, trying to get our picture, you know. We was like, I was coming in to meetings and sitting in the back and listening to what's going on, staying abreast, maybe throwing out a question, point of question here and there, you know, but not really trying to be recognized, you know. It's like, I like this analogy of the bicycle wheel. You know, the spokes in the wheel, all those different spokes make the wheel go round. And the movement's just like that. It has to have all those different components in it and to make the wheel go, to make the movement go. If you don't have one of those spokes in it, the wheel starts to get wobbly. And after a while, if you keep riding it, it'll become not functional. The bike won't run right. It's just like the movement. So if we have a spoke missing here or there, our movement won't work right. And so the armed struggle part of the movement was missing back then that we joined. And, but I disagree with what Lynn said a little while ago. We can't like really differentiate between big actions and small actions and, you know, what work needs to be done. We have to do it all. We have to do the petitions, we have to do the printing, the newspapers, we have to do the, all of it. All of it's necessary and all of it's important. And, you know, you can't like judge and say nonviolent action is less important than a violent action. They're all important. And so I just want to like echo also what Jai was talking about, Mark. You know, it's going to take all of us to do this, you know? I mean, I wonder sometimes like why people don't support the people that did those actions, you know, why they left them in jail, you know? And it could only be because they couldn't do those actions themselves, but they knew they were righteous actions. But if they co-signed it, then people would look to them, well, why aren't you doing it? You know, and then if it came back to like, you know, I just think I'm involved in how we would do it. Nobody wants to be seen like that. So, you know, it's a complicated thing, man, but we all got to do it. We all got to step up, and if you can't do it, support those who did do it.
Yep.
And you can't leave it. Or you'll never get another group to step up and do what you need to know that I was supposed to. You won't get it. People say, well, you left them people, man. Why we gonna step up? You know? So, I think that's it for me. I'm on.
Before we get to Aaron and Jerry, I just want to make a quick announcement. So we are going to pass around this fedora. And if people would like to make a contribution for, part of the reason that we do this panel is there are folks from across North America that get together every year that are really deeply invested and involved in political prisoner support, prison abolition work, and this panel is an opportunity for those of us who are involved in this work to share with the broader community and hopefully draw some of y'all into this work as well. But this conference is, it's a lot of work for people who also spend their whole year doing a lot of work. So if people want to throw in, most of the money has gone towards flying out some of these folks who have been in there for us and are now out here with us, which is pretty awesome. So pass this around. Cash can go in here, and because we're so fancy, if you have a card instead of cash, Wendy over there can take a card donation too. Crazy.
Hey, Jesse, do you need a chair?
Yeah. Little Shambo, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rock, paper, scissors, board, I guess.
Where to start? And how to follow? It's an honor. It's beyond an honor to be at your show. It's so So what do I want to talk about? I just got out. Just got out last January, eighth of January, for serving down there 9 years to the day. Still working through a whole lot of stuff. Take it easy though. I got a lot of support coming in from folks like you, and that has never stopped. And that's definitely what kept everything moving. Those whole 9 years that I was in. But the importance of, like, one thing I didn't want to talk about is, like, the importance of writing books while they're in. Like, when I was in county, I was getting stacks of letters every Wednesday night, and it'd take about 2 weeks for the figures to go through all my stuff, and they just shoot me a stack on Wednesday night. One night, I remember, was going to CO, actually popped the door at like 2 in the morning. And so they do the mailbox at night on my night shift. So I popped up out of bed, not knowing what's coming in. And he's standing there at the door with a big old stack of letters. And he said, "What is this? Who the hell are you?" I said, "I'm sorry." So this is your mail. Who the hell are you? It was like literally like a stack of letters like this. He goes, "I don't get this much junk mail in a month in my own mailbox. And these are all like letters from all over the country. Who the hell are you?" I'm like, "Man, is that my mail?" He just sits there, right, and turns around and leaves. But I mean, receiving that kind of support, like especially kind of like the beginning of my process and being inundated the entire following 6 years. 7 years of being in. I mean, you had dudes in the cats in the unit. McDavid, your name's on the list again. And that's the type of nourishment I felt for those brothers that were in that weren't getting that type of love from the family, but they had definitely like different experiences and different backgrounds that they were coming from. And not to say that like folks don't deserve that type of contact with the outside, but it also like goes to show how impacting it is to have that line of connection and that source of support that comes from the other side. Because while you're in, like, the isolation is, it don't matter if you're on a yard with 1,800 other folks or in a cell all by yourself. That type of connection that actually sustains the party that will go away and that can go away if you can't maintain it. And so, like, the importance of writing books, I mean, I can't write books right now, I'm honestly glad at least. Folks, a lot of people can't. They recognize the former person, but other persons that write, sometimes those letters don't get in. And so, it's the folks like y'all that, if anyone has done time, I don't mean to be excluded, but like folks that haven't done time, to be able to show that type of support to anybody across the spectrum. And especially the folks that are in there for you, that are in there for following their hearts, doing what they know, what they had to do with the time, at what level, whatever, better level. Knowing that folks like you before. I'm like, I get letters. I got a postcard from Brazil written in Portuguese. And I was lucky I knew a little bit of Spanish, was studying a little bit of Latin to be able to like block it all together. But I mean, it was amazing. It was just like that one little postcard. I mean, you get a little postcard that said, hi. I mean, that's nothing for anything else, not your place. I mean, it's somebody that, just this little cute little thing, a little postcard that just said hi. And it just brought a smile on my face, and I was able to like nourish that foundation that they try to knock away in that. And so, write for yourself, write for folks who can't write. All it has to be is hi, thinking about you. Take it easy. Have a good one. I've read an awesome book, the whole spectrum. Anything. That feeds that part of that heart that they're scraping to hold together. And like, another level of this for like prison support. The folks that in Sacramento Prison Support that did a lot of my like legal work, fundraising, the whole gambit. Like they created this like different relationship with the lawyers to where it wasn't, okay, so this is like, there's a situation where there's courts and there's like these professionals to deal with the courts. SPS is able to show that regular folks can study up on it and learn about it. And I saw this all day when I was on the inside, because I'm a guest, learn about the law, get to teach themselves. They don't do anything like that. They just teach themselves, and just like these folks in the Sacramento Prison Support, they taught themselves about the law. And they were the ones there. It wasn't the lawyers. And all of this is them realigning the power structure. Yeah, there's like these people up in the court system, and they're the professionals and members. Nah, that doesn't have to be that way. They're gonna look at it like how they always looked at it. If I come in and bring my perspective, I'm gonna look at it a whole different way, and that's what they did, and this is what happens. Crazy. The potential goes all over the place. Nobody knows what's really going to happen. But trying and learning, that's what people grow when people learn, and that's what we get tangible givebacks and outcomes. And so, yeah, write letters. Do whatever support you can, because it's all there in front of us. You've got to be able to reach out and touch it.
We've been listening to the first half of the former prisoner panel at the North American Anarchist Black Cross event held in Denver, Colorado this year. In an upcoming episode, we will hear the voices of Jerry Coach and Eric McDavid from the panel. The full video from this event can be found at denverabc.wordpress.com or at unicornriot.ninja.